The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
All right, you're welcome along. It's Thursday's Off the Ball. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock this evening. We have got Brian O'Driscoll coming your way from 8. Andy Farrell has named his side as Ireland look to get their first win of this year's Six Nations against Italy on Saturday. 7 changes, but Johnny Sexton is back to start at out half. We'll get Brian's thoughts on that. And also on Joey Carberry's welcome return to the Munster squad. For the first time in a year, he's in the panel for tomorrow night's game. So all that coming your way after 8 o'clock. As always on a Thursday, John Giles on the way from 7:30. And on the football show, Kevin Doyle will talk about some of the big stories of the week in the Champions League. Gary Rogers as well, the former Dundalk goalkeeper, is going to move into agency work alongside George Mendes. So we'll chat to him about that and some of the other bits and pieces that he's doing in his retirement. 53106 is the text number. Add off the ball if you want to get in touch on social media. Richie McCormack, good evening.
Nathan?
I'm all right. Joe Malloy, good evening.
Gents.
How are you?
Very well.
Golf Weekly's up, Richie. We spent a good 20 minutes discussing Rory McIlroy's swing and how this bodes ill for Rory McIlroy heading towards the Masters. I find he's one shot off the lead in the first round of his current tournament. So, listen, all that goodness, and now you get to pay for it. Get on to otbsports.com/golfweekly. Joey Carberry's back, Joe. I got to say, there was a period over the last year where I feared the worst, I guess. The secrecy surrounding it we have become accustomed to in Irish rugby, but because of that, there's a vacuum to be filled, and nobody quite knew just how severe this injury was. Clearly, to have missed pretty much a year of rugby at his age is disastrous in itself, but finally, light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh, for sure. It's brilliant. I felt that the secrecy, because this was dragging on so long, was actually making everybody worry a bit more. You know, there was this sense that, God, this is so bad. Nobody's saying anything about it. His career is in massive danger here, and that's why everybody is so tight-lipped about it, you know? And so suddenly to just see the news, he's back, he's on the bench for tomorrow, is amazing for him. It's brilliant for Irish rugby, because we'd all reached the conclusion, I think, there was nobody behind Johnny Sexton close to where Joey Carberry is. You know, that's why Johnny Sexton is playing against Italy. So we were having fairly gloomy conversations about where Ireland might be in 2023, and be it Harry Byrne or whoever might be taken a spot in a World Cup quarterfinal, the odds were they weren't going to have a huge amount of experience. The one ace we had at Burkhardt, or the one bit of hope we had, was that Joey Carberry would be okay. And so, you know, this is nothing short of transformative. If Carberry's back and he's playing like he, you know, showed more than just glimpses of for Munster. I mean, he had some brilliant performances for Munster in the Heineken Champions Cup, which really just made the move down there look like a very smart one, as much as Leinster didn't like it. And he was struck down. So, you know, I would think Andy Farrell and Mike Catt and everybody sitting around the table are having some fairly serious conversations already and saying, look, if he goes well, genuinely, if he goes well, and which, I mean, you would think about having him in before the end of the Six Nations. Now, maybe that is sacrilege to even say, given the risk they took with him at the World Cup. But for Farrell and Mike Catt, when they're talking even medium term, the fact that Carberry might be there just changes everybody's mood. Because this Irish team, you know, Sexton aside, we keep saying we're in transition. We're not in transition. There's a bunch of lads there. It's a brilliant age profile, that team. So, I mean, Carberry suddenly there, the picture's a lot rosier for me, massively.
Yeah, it does change the conversation completely. And I wonder how much internally it has affected the decision-making over the last few weeks. Because from the outside, because Joey Carberry, up to this week, we weren't quite sure when he'd be back. We're talking about fast-tracking Harry Byrne, the constant questions about Billy Byrne, and Andy Farrell will have been aware that Joey Carberry was this close. So while everybody else is in absolute panic about the succession plan, now, he hasn't played yet, so let's hold our horses, and you can't just rely now on Joey Carberry as much as you just can't rely on Johnny Sexton. But they must have been aware that while everybody else was, we have to fast-track Harry Byrne past Billy Burns and Ross Byrne. Well, actually, we don't, because Joey Carberry should be back, maybe not Six Nations, but if there's a summer tour, and certainly by Autumn Internationals.
I think that's exactly right, yeah. I mean, that suddenly the Sexton selection for the Italy game makes a lot more sense. You know, he tried Burns, he tried Ross Byrne, but maybe he knew all along that Joey Carberry was much closer than we all knew, for obvious reasons. Now, as you said, it comes with about 10 different caveats. I mean, he wouldn't be the first player who makes a comeback and breaks down again, and you really hope that doesn't happen. You know, Stephen Ferris made comebacks, and you know, ultimately it was the ankle that finished him. And you know, I guess as a professional, when it's your livelihood on the line, you make an educated gamble to give it a go. And hopefully that's not where Carberry is. I mean, he's been kicking, he's been taking part in training. So fingers crossed it all goes well. But yeah, I think you're right. I think if Farrell and the team had the nod from Munster that actually he's very close and he's on the way back, then there isn't the same pressure to blood the likes of Billy Burns or Jack Carty or Ross Byrne, which we all felt on the outside, you know, come on, we've got 25 games to the World Cup. What are we doing here? So fingers crossed. Look, it's such a mood booster for Irish rugby, given a fairly grim opening 11 games thus far into the Farrell tenure.
Yeah, the best thing he's done, Richie, is sit out the last year.
Yeah, he's gotten to have a look at the lie of the land from a distance, I guess. He's been busy studying for a master's as well, so it's not as if he's been idle for the past 14 months. I wouldn't, like, I know there's renewed optimism around him. What he needs more than anything now is a run of games, because even with that comeback that he had post-World Cup, it only lasted a couple of games, and then he was out again with another injury. So he needs to just get games under his belt, and I don't think it would be in anyone's interests to fast-track him into the squad for the remainder of the Six Nations for the last two games that come after the Italy one. Just let him get game time under his belt at Munster, whether that's a number of appearances off the bench and a couple of starts between now and the end of the season. Maybe pick him for the, probably pick him for the summer tour and then see how he goes from there. There's no rush right now to get Joey Carberry into an international team.
Just make sure. Typical Malloy, isn't it? He'll be on the TV on Saturday now saying, where's the long-term planning? He's on the radio on Thursday night. Get him into the squad for the Six Nations.
Well, like, we're coming from a period whereby
he needs a big story.
Yeah, well, we came from a period, like he mentioned and Johan van Graan mentioned, and I appreciate that they're just being cautious and they want to keep everyone's heads level, including Joe's, around this story. But Johan van Graan said, 2 weeks ago, that we haven't got a time frame yet on Joey's return. Clearly he's holding his cards close to his chest, but there's also a part of that that's absolutely true, and that they didn't want to rush him back. And I'd still worry that this might be too soon from given the length of time that he has been out to come back in and play against Cardiff. But I'd be 100% faithful in the Munster medical team that he's grand to come off and play 20 minutes at the Arms Park tomorrow night. Beyond that, let's just let him bed in again.
Of course. Look, it's a Thursday night. It's lockdown 3. We're daring to dream a little bit. So I'm getting a little bit excited about the future for sure. And I won't apologise for it, McCormick. But I mean, not least the way Munster were clearly deeply unhappy. Like deeply unhappy with the way Carberry was taken to the World Cup in 19 and the consequences of that decision. I would be damn sure they'll be very, very slow about wanting to release him for international duty. And they're right to do so. So look, caution all the way. But given where we were a month ago, every time Carberry was mentioned by you, Rich, in a news round and there was no real update. I mean, to see him suddenly in a match 23, it's just fantastic for him as well. I mean, can you imagine what he's been through?
And at least it'll cheer up all those Munster supporters who've been getting so upset over the last few weeks about the Harry Byrne conversation, that this guy should be fast-tracked, that he's the next Dan Carter, apparently, just because he plays for Leinster. So you can stop sending your texts. Joey Carberry.
They're going to love this old Leinster backline at the weekend, aren't they?
First time since 1931?
Really?
Wow.
Oh, there's another one for you, Joe. You just used that.
Tune in around 2:30, Nathan. Back from the ad break. Wait for that one to drop.
Yeah. All right. 53106, the text number. The news round on Off the Ball on News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. A lot of live football on this evening, Richie.
Yeah, four British sides looking to join Tottenham in tomorrow's draw for the last 16 of the Europa League into the second half. In fact, there's an hour on the clock in Piraeus where it's currently Arsenal 1, Benfica 1. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang put Arsenal in front tonight, helped by a superb ball from Bukayo Saka. Diogo Goncalves levelled for the notional visitors 2 minutes before the break. That is 2-2 on aggregate as things stand. They'll be heading to extra time and possibly penalties. And the Rangers-Antwerp tie has just continued to be mad. At Ibrox at the moment, with what, just under an hour played there. It's Rangers 3, Antwerp 2 on the night. Rangers now lead 7-5 on aggregate. The defending for both sides has been comical, and there will be more goals between now and the final whistle. But 7-5, Rangers currently lead on aggregate, 3-2 on the night. There's an 8 p.m. start at the King Power, where Leicester and Slavia are far more sedate, 0-0 after last week's first leg in the Czech capital, while Manchester United are going to merely rubber stamp their place in the last 16. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side resume 4-0 up on Real Sociedad.
Bruno Fernandes starting and captaining Manchester United tonight, considering that they are 4-1 up. It's a bit of a surprise, and they've got a huge game on Sunday that we'll have live here on Off the Ball against Chelsea. But Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, maybe just wanting to keep some momentum going, has gone with a relatively strong side. It's a good crack following Rangers in the Europa League. Not that the Celtic fans will be enjoying it too much. If Rangers get to a quarter-final, a semi-final in the Europa League,
it's big.
Gerrard is putting himself in a very, very strong position.
For what?
What's his next move, do you think? Yeah, I was just going to say. So, Klopp's at Liverpool for the next 4 or 5 years. Let's say that for a second. Where would Gerrard's next move be if it was a Premier League club? What level is he pitching in at?
Would he go to Palace? Is Palace too small for him? Like, Roy Hodgson, you would expect, will leave this summer. Does he
Palace
get the Leicester
too,
job if Rodgers moves
too,
on?
Too big a job. I think what he wants is a fairly settled medium to large size club now. If he's gone heading on from Rangers, he might well be quite happy there. But Palace have a lot of players in and around the 30-year-old mark. They have a lot of players this summer who they regularly play are going to be out of contract as well. So there's a massive rebuilding job to be done at a club like that. And then again, if Gerrard wants to take a job like a Crystal Palace and it doesn't necessarily go well, like you're suddenly way down the ladder, you'll never be short of a job, but you're not going to be touched by essentially the club that he wants to end up at, which is Liverpool or possibly a big club abroad. It's a big decision for him where he goes next. Similarly, you know, Frank Lampard's probably in the same boat after what happened at Chelsea. He's better off sticking where he is at the moment and seeing what arises over the next while. But a Palace, I think, would be too... it'd be too messy for them to go in and do a complete overhaul just there just yet. 2-1 Benfica, by the way. They now lead 3-2 on aggregate.
Wow, that'd be a bit of a setback for Arsenal. I've always struggled to warm to Gerrard, but particularly as a manager, everything is just so stereotypical of what a manager should, the way he dresses, the way he talks. There's nothing of interest. It's, I'm not having it at all.
I've always presumed his ego would be too big to succeed at Liverpool as manager. He still sees himself as Mr. Liverpool. It's a similar scenario to, I think, when Graeme Souness went back in there, or, you know, a Roy Keane in management. I don't think in his eyes there's many players can live up to what he did.
I disagree. I think that's very harsh. Genuinely. I don't think he actually has that ego. I think he's played with players throughout his career who weren't as good as him and was regarded by all as a brilliant teammate, brilliant captain. He's gone to Rangers and done a phenomenal job with Leicester players. I think he talks himself down at times, actually. I see him as a fairly head-screwed-on type. I don't think he's swaggering in there Alan Souness at all, I have to say, whenever it does happen.
I think Liverpool were quite happy to get rid of him when he was under-19 manager, let him go off and sow his wild oats elsewhere and not have him, when at the time Klopp was still betting in very much at Liverpool, not have him hovering over the incumbent manager. I think, I don't know, it's never struck me as something that would be a good mix.
Yeah, I've been surprised by how well he's done. I would have been like you, Richie, and had similar thoughts, and particularly that maybe last season at Liverpool where it didn't feel as though he was bowing out particularly gracefully, but as a player. But the job he's done at Rangers, and to bring them up and to not just surpass Celtic, but to absolutely run away with that league title. Like, his reputation is already far greater as a manager than I ever expected it to be.
Mm. Yeah, and it's a big deal going up there. I know we dismiss it a little bit because TV money means that we've moved on a little bit from Rangers and Celtic feeling like massive clubs by Premier League standards and European standards. But it's such a goldfish bowl, press conferences all the time, easy to put a foot wrong very, very easily. And he's handled all sorts of issues really well. I've been a bit surprised as well just how brilliantly he's done. I agree with Rich on the Crystal Palace point. When you make a move like that into the Premier League, there is a ceiling for the team. And then if you spend too long hovering around that ceiling, or even don't do particularly well, just do okay, then it's kind of hard for Liverpool to turn around and hire the Crystal Palace manager when they're in 15th, you know? So it's really, I mean, maybe he is better off staying at Rangers and winning 2, 3, 4 league titles in a row, and that's an easier jump to Liverpool.
Well, Gavin has pointed out that Steven Gerrard has won a tin pot league against zero competition, a Celtic team in full-on self-destruct mode, and now we think he's ready for the Premier League. No chance. Hapoel Nicosia beckons. Wowzers. Joe, Nathan, Richie, I'm in no way an expert on rugby, but I am curious as to why JJ Hanrahan was never ever mentioned during the replacement number 10 debate. Surely he would be more experienced than any of the Burns fellas, but his name was never mentioned. Just wondering, thanks. Im in Cork, love the show and can't wait to sign up for the new Golf Weekly podcast. I'll just do it now, Im in Cork.
I wait, yeah.
I guess we've any amount of podcasts you can listen back to over the past few months about JJ Hanrahan, where there's a lot of love and a lot of expectation, and a week later, Joe, it just hasn't happened. Yeah. That lack of consistency kills him.
A lot of talent from an early age. And look, too many big moments, he's not quite delivered. Now, he's had some great moments. I mean, Claremont away this year was phenomenal, but there have been missed kicks at crucial moments, which have just led to too many people not being sure about his ability to handle the pressure, which obviously a test level, as Billy Burns will tell you at the end of the game in Cardiff, is pretty important. So I think consistency and those big pressure moments have gone against him, unfortunately.
Well, he wasn't in the mix for this weekend, but the team has been named, Richie.
Yeah, Andy Farrell making 7 changes to his Ireland side for Saturday's Six Nations game away to Italy. Jonathan Sexton, as expected, returns at out half, having missed the defeat to France with a head injury. But Conor Murray misses out with a hamstring problem, and Jameson Gibson-Park is retained at scrum half. Jordan Larmour replaces Keith Earls on the right wing with James Lowe on the left and Gary Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw in the centre. There's a new front row combination of Dave Kilcoyne, Ronan Kelleher and Tyke Furlong, while James Ryan is also back from a head injury to partner Ian Henderson in the second row. That sees Tyke Byrne move to the blind side with Will Connors on the open and CJ Stander at number 8. Craig Casey and Ryan Baird could make their debuts off the bench. Farrell asked today if he was desperate for Sexton to stay on despite the 35-year-old conceding earlier this week and he might not be around for the next World Cup.
Desperate? Look, as long as Johnny keeps on giving to Irish rugby, obviously he'll keep putting his foot forward to be in the equation, won't he? You know, he feels good at this moment in time. His appetite's as strong as ever. He's certainly one of those guys that makes the feeling in the group feel right. And as long as that appetite stays, I'm sure that we'll keep moving in the right direction regarding that.
The breaking news today, Richie, is that a long contract extension at Virgin Media for Joe Malloy. The Six Nations is never ending.
Good Lord. Really? I get some fill-in gigs?
Keep the money flowing. Oh, yeah. Pay me all the way to July, guys. Push that France-Scotland game back. Any word of when it's going to happen?
It seems, at least according to the French media, that the postponed meeting of France and Scotland won't be played until July. France camp reporting today another positive COVID-19 case after 2 days of negative results. Ron Nogara is going to be happy about this one. La Rochelle prop Winnie Antonio, there's a 12th player in the squad to test positive since the defeat of Ireland. Six Nations organisers want the game to be played on March 6th or 7th. However, Scotland may not have all of their players available due to prior commitments with clubs, which could lead to a lengthy delay to that game being played and would utterly ruin the seeming conclusion to this year's championship, which looked like it was going to be a Grand Slam showdown between Wales and France.
Yeah, in one way, Joe, it's out of everybody's control, these COVID cases, but the fact that they can't play it the week after when there is that break week, again, just shows the power that the clubs have, even over the premier rugby competition in the Northern Hemisphere. He's been silenced.
He's got the home. Did I go there? Am I back?
You're back.
You're back.
I missed your entire question. Oh, I heard in one way, Joe, and I thought it was going to be another one.
It doesn't look like this is going to happen in the break week, is essentially what I was saying, when really it should.
Yeah, it's isn't it? I mean, we are now going to be sitting there on March 20th and we'll be signing off saying, well, France probably will still win the Grand Slam. They just have to beat Scotland in Paris. But we'll see you when we see you, everyone. So it's so unfortunate. You just wonder, is that going to be the end of it? You know, like, that's out of control, it seems, in the French camp. I mean, you wouldn't be surprised if there are more positive cases, unfortunately, into next week, and then you have to quarantine for 14 days. So
heads could roll over this as well. I've been reading a lot in the French media over the past couple of days. There's a lot of fingers pointing towards Fabien Galthié and his role in bringing the original case into the squads. The French vice president, French rugby, Serge Simon, blamed a trainer that had been working with the French sevens. But there's others that have said that account is completely false. And again, fingers pointing at Galthié. Roxana Marcinanu, the sports minister over in France, wants an internal investigation into how this had happened, because they'd put the foot down and said that these protocols need to be in place. These specific protocols need to be in place if they're going to play anything beyond the opening game of the campaign. And they did them, and yet still somebody somewhere has messed up, and it looks like it could be Galtier. And you'd wonder about his future if that does happen to be the case, because when it's going to a governmental level and they ain't happy, you know, someone's got to go.
Yeah, there's certainly been a blame game. I know the French were maybe trying to imply that they had picked it up while they were here in Dublin a couple of weeks back. But yeah, we haven't heard the end of this. Golf, Richie, the World Golf Championship underway?
Yeah, the Workday Championship is underway in Florida at the moment. Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry both in the field for this one. McIlroy has dropped a shot in the last while. He is back to 2 under par through his first 10 holes there in Florida. Shane Lowry, he is level par through 8. The early lead in Florida held by Wade Ormsby and also Joaquin Neiman of Chile on 5 under par, pardon me. Just check where McIlroy dropped those shots. He picked up 3 birdies on his outward 9. But he has dropped back to 2 under par with 8 to play. And meanwhile, in Puerto Rico, Seamus Power, is just 3 shots off the lead there. He opened with a 69 today to finish up on 3 under par. Padraig Harrington is 2 under, a 70 for the European Ryder Cup captain today. And Harrington is 4 shots off the lead of the 4-way tie at the top. Robert Garrigues, home favourite Rafael Campos, Taylor Pendrith, and Lee Hodges all on 6 under.
Yeah, these are big weeks for a player like Seamus Power, where the best players in the world at the World Golf Championship, but actually a Puerto Rico Open victory can get you all sorts of benefits for the coming years. We cover the World Golf Championship and obviously a lot of talk about Tiger as well and the accident on this week's Golf Weekly, which is up now on all our social channels. And we are moving to Patreon on March 11th. You can get all the details on that on otbsports.com/Golf Weekly. The Aintree Grand National, it is happening.
Yeah, before I mention that, Kieran Tierney has levelled for Arsenal on the night. It's a 2-2 now in Piraeus with 18 minutes to play. It is 3-3 on aggregate, but at Benfica now on away goals. This year's Aintree Grand National, as you mentioned, Nathan, will be run as planned on April the 10th. Crowds are set to be allowed to return to British sporting venues in May, leading to rumours that the 173rd running of the famous steeplechase could be delayed. But the Jockey Club today announcing that they've opted to keep the current date, meaning no spectators will be present at the Liverpool course.
The old prediction of maybe Stephen Gerrard staying at Rangers and winning 4-5 hasn't gone down well. Paddy and Letterkenny, behave yourselves. Hang your head in shame, lads, with the Gerrard Rangers love. In 1 trophy in 3 years, says Jim and Marino. Well, let's give it time. 53106 is the text number. Keep them coming. I think we are pretty much done, Richie. Thank you, as always, for that.
Cheers.
Joe, thank you. Enjoy the weekend.
Evening, fellas. See ya.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.